We've been following the big cleanup that you've been doing in the police.
Yes.
Looking at, I mean, we've seen the dismissal yesterday.
Yes.
The arrest of the Deputy National Commissioner.
Yes.
Then there's been the blue lights scandal.
Yes.
And the vehicle marking scandal.
Yes.
Commissioner, in terms of your cleanup, what is the strategy? How big is the problem? How deep do you have to dig to get rid of the rot and to ensure that the police are where they need to be?
Okay. Look, maybe I need to give you the background from the turnaround vision's point of view.
Perfect.
When I got appointed into the police service, I adopted the turnaround vision. On my second day of appointment, I presented the turnaround vision even to the media. When we look at the history of the police service, like the first example I can give you, one of the highest expectations at the time from the nation, they wanted to know how I was going to deal with crime intelligence, because for more than 8 years that division stayed without a divisional commissioner, and being the foundation for fighting crime, it was also engulfed by corruption and several other things. Then the turnaround vision, it's a vision that I have adopted to undertake what I can call the corporate renewal of the organization, the corporate renewal approach. Rebuilding, reclaiming the image of SAPS, restoring service delivery, and ensuring that the public receive the service they deserve, including their safety. Now, SAPS, as a result of the contamination level, was unable to deliver such a service and win the confidence of the public. Now, I can then say that somewhere along the historical path, as the organization has been traveling, it got unfortunately infiltrated by criminality. So, and it then targeted certain environments. And one of the worst affected environments is the very same ones that I prioritize as the first. It was CI. If I could get CI right, then the foundation for fighting crime would have been corrected. I'm sure then you saw, within 3 months after I started, I dealt with the issue of the divisional commissioner. And then I presented the corporate renewal energy, that is a strategy. Then the second worst affected was supply chain, and which I then think people started doing business there. It was both suppliers as well as certain specific members within. And this particular type of criminal infiltration also extended to two others. One of them was forensic, and the others was TMS, technology management. The approach I needed to change and the balance I needed to strike was to make sure that I do not only kill the messenger or the user. Because what happened in the beginning was that most of the people who would be exposed as having committed criminal misconduct or any other misconduct within the organization are the junior members. But when you you start digging deeper into that, you would then discover that these members are either working on an instruction or they are being used, but they then got used to even getting a benefit themselves out of that. But in a normal process of an organization, you would know that a junior member would fear to do that, would not have that braveness to can do that on his or her own. And when we conducted investigations on those particular times, looking at the problem or the nature of the problem, only those members were flushed out of the service, the juniors. But we did not look at the root cause. But this time I changed the approach. I decided, let us strike a balance between the members and senior officers. Whoever commits, whether it's a departmental misconduct or is a criminal misconduct, must be dealt with in the same way. Because if a constable and a general commit a misconduct, then it means the two, they are bringing themselves to a point of being equal. There's no longer a difference, because if a parent doesn't behave like a parent, but behave like a child, and the two both make a mistake, I think they've come to the same level. You can no longer draw the distinction. The same applies here. I decided the misconduct is a misconduct, whoever commits it. And then I have applied the disciplinary code of the department just equal. That's why at the present moment, you see both generals and constables either leaving the organization through misconduct or be charged in a particular manner.
I mean, you must be quite disappointed to see your very senior staff being arrested. I mean, how do you, from a personal perspective, how do you feel about this?
Look, obviously, because the starting point is you would never expect that at that particular level, this could be the findings. And secondly, the levels where we are taking action at the present moment, they are as good as your right and left hands. And what would then amount to a disappointment is the fact that the very same people that you refer to as your pillars, they almost get cut off.
And in terms of where to now, I mean, we've seen some big arrests this week. In the last 3 months, we've seen some massive arrests. I mean, are we likely to see a lot more arrests happening?
Yeah, look, firstly, let me say, through the corporate renewal approach to supply chain, because I think supply chain at the present moment carries more than 70% of the corporate image of the organization. And I have decided that if I get supply chain right, I would have corrected the image of the organization or restored it. But secondly, it can also help me to win almost half of the confidence of the public back. Now, I then decided, after putting in all the measures, including forensic audits and everything, and realizing that things were coming out, I decided to establish a special investigation unit. And you know, it's a task team. Then this special investigation started unearthing a lot of criminality, which was also informed by the forensic audits that were conducted. So from that particular point where we started to effect some arrest, it also then shows that there's more and more people involved, that gets implicated. But as these people get implicated, I think we arrest them. All I can say is that I cannot give you a number of other arrests that are coming, but I can say the process of takedown arrests has not stopped. It shows that there's still a little bit more coming. But this is going to continue until we clear the environment and we also clear the organization.
You spoke about resistance. I mean, I was doing an interview with the ID as well.
Yes.
And they were also speaking about serious resistance and challenges and the dangers to such investigations. You know, could you elaborate on the resistance in that, please?
Yeah, maybe I can start by saying, well, it's best described in the idiomatic expression that a drowning man always catches a straw. So no one goes down without retaliation, especially if you have to go to jail. So look, the first starting point is when people engage in corruption, firstly, they make it part and parcel of their daily lives. And they then become dependent on it for income or for their living. Now, when you come in and you say this is crime, they strongly resist because they're going to part firstly with the money and the luxurious life that they are living. And then secondly, you can't take them, you know, from Carlton Center to jail because they're living there in luxury. So they then offer resistance. Now, this resistance is offered in many ways. Firstly, they destroy the evidence. They make sure that you don't find any evidence. But secondly, they pose serious threats, which include life threats to investigators if you're not careful, and to any other administrators who then suddenly would become witnesses from that particular administration, because there's a lot of them who also receive threats and quite a lot of other stuff. So that is the type of resistance which they offer. But as we investigate, as we continue with investigation, I also then sanction threat assessments where the situation so warrants. And if then the situation demands that we should go to an extent of either opting for witness protection for certain of our witnesses, we do so. If it warrants the security of our investigators, subject to threat assessment, I also order that such security be provided. And this particular security does not only apply to us working together with ID, working together with other investigation institutions, we also look at them.
And have you, I mean, with the big cleanup that you've been doing, I mean, this has been something that's been coming along for about 18 months now.
Yes.
Has there been a big increase in threats? I mean, is it be it life threats, be it destruction of evidence? I mean, have you come across cases where this has happened, where people have tried to scupper your investigations?
Look, maybe I can describe it more as a risk, because the risk has been more within, where you would experience a situation where critical files get lost. You will not find them because some people has got access to them. Yes, there's also been few witnesses coming forward and, you know, fearing for their lives, which we dealt with. But On the side of investigators, we were proactive. Remember, we make sure that they are properly resourced, and we also made sure that we give them proper support. So the threat has been minimal, that they were there, but minimal. But we were also proactive with the threat assessments to make sure that we look after their threats. So I can then say to you that yes, but they are under control. They've been under control. But as we proceed, I still foresee that the level of threat is going to grow.
And are you worried about that?
Look, I don't want to lose my members. That is point number one. But point number two, look, we've been rated number one in the Corruption Watch. So that still worries me. And I want to clear this organization out of that. And those members who are highly dedicated and who sacrifice their lives for clearing the image of this organization, if I hear there's any threat against them, yes, I'll be worried.
And in terms of Magwanya's case, I mean, she's somebody who rose up through the ranks. I mean, she started off as a teacher, like a career police officer.
We trained together in Namaskar College.
Did you train together?
Yes, we were together.
Yeah. I mean, so you've known her all the way through the ranks. I mean, how do you feel?
I would rather suggest that I don't express my feeling individually. Remember, she's still going through a court. All I can say is that what happened, I did not expect.
In terms of, you know, the steps going forward, you obviously know from your anti-corruption task team and ID, who's next or who's on your radar. What is your message to these people?
Look, the those that are implicated, my message from an amicable point of view is that government has put down resources for policing in order for us to create a safe and secure environment for all in the Republic of South Africa, as well as providing a security foundation for economic revival. In no way these resources can be exploited by individuals for their own benefit. And if any of them would get implicated, I think from the very first day we get to know, I am ready. I have a good relationship with correctional services. I will immediately take away my uniform and exchange it with the orange uniform and just make sure that they go to where they belong, because they can't come here and pretend to be serving the public, yet they are there for their own benefits. But secondly, I am not going to allow them to continue to tarnish the image of this organization. This organization require a reputation that we need to present to the public in order to win their confidence and make sure that the economy in this country grows, because corruption scares investors away, and this particular crime will then go down on its knees, because the grand economic strategy, if we continue like this, is likely to collapse. So zero tolerance. It doesn't matter who you are, what rank you hold. That's my message.